Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hey, everyone. I'm going to try something new today. At the end of the interview, I'll share some actions to try or advice to take that I learned from this interview. You can also read these same thoughts in the show notes, so stay tuned for that. Now, on to my guest for today, Farzad Rashidi, founder of Respana. Farzad immigrated from Iran as a teenager. After college, he took an internship with Visme, which has fast become a major competitor to Canva, offering visual tools for businesses. There, he learned and honed strategies in marketing and SEO, becoming its director of marketing. Noting that only 10% of what a marketer does ends up being productive, he learned that SEO and backlinking have been key to helping Visme become more visible and attract more traffic to their site without having to pay all that advertising. It also requires a lot of labor to do that. So like many entrepreneurs, the idea for Respana arose out of a need that wasn't being filled. In this case, an effective tool for efficiently doing personalized outreach to scale your PR and marketing. Respana is still in its early stages, but showing a lot of promise. As Farzad explains, much of the learning of how to be a successful marketer is simply experimenting and reassessing what's going on. One constant he has found is the necessity of building relationships. Unlike other tools, Respana seeks to harness the efficiency of automation and put it to use to personalize connections. Respana makes it more efficient to practice the principles behind good marketing, producing good content, building relationships, and being of service. And you know what? It works, because the reason I know Farzad and Respana is because one of his guys, Vlad, cold emailed me to reach out to get a link on my blog. And I was so impressed that I'm like, I got to try this tool and I got to interview the CEO. So now let's get better together. Farzad Rashidi, welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, yeah, what's really cool about you and what you do over at Responda.com is that
one of your guys, I think his name's Vlad. Vlad cold emailed me with a fantastic cold email. Like, I get 3 or 4 cold emails a day. 95% of them I hit delete just because it's my job as a PR and marketing professional to pitch people. And I get annoyed when I get pitched poorly. It's a pet peeve of mine, right? So Vlad said, hey, I would love to like work with you on, I don't even remember what it was, but it was so impressive. I'm like, sure. Yeah, let's talk. And then in that email, I said, oh, hey, I'd love to have a demo for Responda. and he's like, really? Okay, sure. And so that's how I got to meet you, because you're the CEO of Responda. So before we talk about that journey and what you guys do, why don't you let me know, and our listeners, how you got to do what you're doing today?
Of course, absolutely. And by the way, it's Responda. I know a lot of people add a little D in there, which
Responda. Responda. Sorry, it's Responda. I am bad with names and stuff. I'm happy I got your name right, so I'm good.
You're good. Normally, people mess up both, so you're good. You're 50% there.
Batting 500. That's awesome.
Perfect. Well, Jari, just to give you a brief overview of my background, I am foreign, actually quite foreign, as you can tell from my name. I'm Iranian originally. Moved to the States when I was, 17 years old. And I finished up high school here and finished up college and got involved with a company called VizMe, which I believe you might have heard of. I think I brought it up last time we had a conversation. So VizMe, for folks who don't know, it's somewhat of a competitor to Canva. We are a all-in-one visual communication tool focused more on the B2B side. And at a time when I got involved with the company was super duper tiny. It's like 7-8 people in there and completely bootstrapped. I was the first marketing hire. They only had some engineers. And so I joined the company as an intern at the very beginning. And you know, it sort of blew up after a couple of years of working there. Not necessarily because of me, but you know, the team there are all like rock stars, and the product became very good and very well known. Fast forward to today, VizMe has over 8.5 million active users. They're doubling that year over year, and you know, over 70 employees, fully profitable, still bootstrap, not looking for any outside funding. And the key to the success of that company was the way we acquire our customers. And that's through organic search and SEO. So right now, VizMe is getting over 2 million organic visitors to our website every single month. And just in terms of PPC, if you were to bring that level of traffic, according to tools like Ahrefs, that's worth about $1.5 million. Bucks worth of AdWords that we're getting for free.
No, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of this. So keep going. I'd love to hear.
Yeah,
this.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're getting anywhere between 22 to 25,000 new signups to our platform every single day with very little paid advertising and almost no cold outreach on the business side. So the way we went about doing this, and again, you know, it all sounds glamorous and fancy, but at the end of the day, it's quite a simple process for the way we built VizMe, the marketing channels. And we sort of learned that the hard way. We obviously, you know, at the very beginning, we're just throwing some spaghetti on the wall and experimenting like, you know, the latest email funnels and marketing strategies. And at the end of the day, when we came back there, it was like, okay, the thing that's paying the bills is the SEO. So let's become like damn good at this part so we can scale. And that gives us a hockey stick growth too, because it's the only channel that wouldn't require you to keep pouring cash into it to scale. So basically what we did at the time was positioning ourselves in places where people who are looking for a solution like ours would organically find us, because building a brand is expensive. Like Canva, everybody knows Canva. They're a household brand. How?
You ask? I love Canva. So no diss on VizMe, but I'm a big fan of Canva for sure.
I might have face some challenges with the VizMe team, but I love Canva too. I think they're a great software for what they do.
No, they are.
And
they are.
With, to be honest, we were quite different from them in the aspect that, you know, again, I don't want to deviate from the conversation too much, but they're more of a B2C software. Visme is more on the B2C side. So if you run an organization, you need more power, you need, you know, other features like animation and whatnot. So that's what Visme is mainly differentiated. But anyways, going back to our conversation, Canva's, the way they've become a household brand is by raising $300 million in the past few years. And you know, they've done a fantastic job, but they've thrown money at it quite a lot to become this well known. So as a bootstrap company, you know, we always have like the lean startup sort of mindset. You know, Rand Fishkin, if you've heard it, if you've read his book Lost and Founder, you know, he kind of sort of talks about in his book how his journey was with the VCs. So we sort of trying to stay away from that route and trying to stay bootstrap as much as possible. And to be honest, it hasn't hindered our growth so far. So anyway, so the way we've been in the game, and again, we have to remember that design tools come and go every single day. There's like hundreds of them every single day. They come out and go. Past few years I've been in the industry, very few stick around. And the way Visme's, you know, skyrocketing growth that's come to be is by, you know, finding these places where people were ready to pay for our tool. And at the moment of purchase, we grab them. So let's say, for example, you're a customer. You want to create a presentation tomorrow and say you want to make a video out of it. You can't do that in Canva yet. So what do you do? Was as a consumer and you don't have any other solutions, you're looking for a new solution. What's the first thing you do in your research process?
I mean, I would Google it or exactly. Actually, sorry, I would DuckDuckGo it now because I'm a fan of DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo, right. Well, you use some sort of search and you try to basically find a solution. Normally right. People Google.
Right.
Now,
right.
The way we want to capture your attention is by showing up in the first organic search results, because most likely if you're anything like me, I normally just pass over the paid ads. I just didn't even look at them. Just jump straight to the first organic search results. Now, getting to those spots for your commercial keywords is excruciatingly difficult. And they're extremely competitive. They're bottom of the funnel, you know, high commercial intent. And normally dominated by like big brands. So the way we kind of beat them and sort of have our website show up in those search results is by following a very simple site structure. So for every single one of our parent keywords, we create a landing page, right? So for example, for our presentations, we have a presentation software landing page. So if you go on Google right now, presentation software, I'm sure Visme will show up in the top five. Now the way, but that's the easy stuff. The way we get up in ranking is by creating what we call a topical authority for that parent keyword. So for our presentation software landing page, the way we go and establish ourselves as an authoritative source, quote unquote, for that keyword is by creating what we call a content silo. Meaning on that blog, that's just a fancy way of saying, just create a category and write a crap load of content about presentations. Now, the way we write those pieces of content, that's a whole nother hour-long conversation. So I've written a little book on this. If folks want to look that up, you can just go and Google Visme marketing strategy, and then you can just download the book. It's free. And I'll kind of sort of break it down. It's like 160 pages. So make sure you do that on the weekend, not on the weekday. And then I sort of break down step by step exactly how we go about researching and writing those pieces of content to make sure they're optimized and of high quality. Now, what we do then is that from individual one of these blog posts, we mention our landing pages in that blog post, or SEOs call it an internal link. But having an internal link, I always say to folks, I'm like, it's like my mom saying I'm handsome. That bears very little credibility, because when your blog post, you're referencing your own page, that doesn't really mean much. But what happens if you go and build authority for that blog post by reaching out to other relevant resources and incentivizing them to actually give you a backlink that's relevant, that's editorial, basically that increases what we call the page authority of that blog post. Now, since you have a do follow internal link to your landing page, that passes on that link equity and at the same time helps that blog post start getting rankings for your target keywords. So you're getting top of the funnel traffic for your blog posts. About half of our traffic actually comes directly from our blog. Plus, that helps your landing pages start ranking for Google and ranking Google for your target keywords. And that's where you get your bottom of the funnel traffic, right? Coming to your landing pages, because nobody wants to link to a commercial page. A lot of people kind of skip all these steps and go straight to build a landing page or to build backlinks to their site. And then normally that results in very little success. So that whole process of finding and reaching out to folks and trying to get a backlink, I'm sure, as you mentioned at the very beginning, Jari, is much easier said than done, because
there's a lot of bad cold emails out there for sure.
Oh yes. And you know, that process is something that we had to also learn the hard way. We tried these spammy ways of just blasting emails. We tried everything you can name, pretty much any tool that was out there, any strategy was out there. The only way we actually found it to be effective, because marketers tend to ruin everything, so the only things that actually work now are by spending the time to first find the right opportunities that would make sense for them to link to us. Two, find the right person, not just contacting support or a general inbox. Three is level of personalization, just to stand out from their inbox, just imply to the guy that, hey, I actually sat down, did my research. It's not just another spammy address email sent out to like 10,000 other people. And last but not least, which is actually one of the most important part of outreach, which a lot of people, including some of our customers, actually miss out on, is the incentive. You know, Jari, I don't call you and say, hey, Jari, can you go pick up my grandma from the airport? You're like, who are you? You know what I mean? Just you don't text people or call people and ask them to do something for you without actually offering something in return. That's just how the society works. So you want to make sure you offer some sort of incentive. Now, it's against Google policy to pay cash. There's plenty of other ways you can incentivize folks. You can do a collaboration with them. You can share their content on their social media channels. You can give them a link back from another guest post you're writing. You can, oh gosh, we have customers who send them a t-shirt on Vistaprint. It's like they ship globally, like $12. And they're like, yeah, let me send you a t-shirt. If you're a SaaS product like ours, we normally give out a free subscription to our tool for a month. There's plenty of different ways you can incentivize folks to work with you and build a relationship from there, not just let them go after that transaction is done. We have a whole process of what comes after. So wait for future emails from Vlad. He'll contact you in a few weeks.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, build a relationship with people and just... And so that whole process was done completely manually at VizMe. And trust me, all ties back to Respond, I promise. So that process was done completely manually, and it was expensive because we had data miners who do the research, find the contacts. We had another group of people who would put together email pitches. And now we had another group of people who would communicate with these guys after the responses. It was slow because it was very manual. We had to do pretty much all of those steps by hand, and we tried every tool you can imagine. There are plenty of tools out there for sending emails, for link building, and none of them really fit into the mold of personalized quality outreach at scale. They were either like CRM tools that's great for personalization but didn't have the scalability aspect, or had the opposite ratio. It was a mass email tool that was built for just sending mass pitches. So we're like, okay, there's got to be a way that we could streamline it without losing quality. And that's when we just started developing Respondo unintentionally. It was sort of an internal tool for us at VizMe. And it just worked wonders. We put together a really ugly prototype, and our outreach team loved it. They're like, man, this is like a gift.
Yeah, no. I mean, I know you guys are in beta right now, and even the beta version's pretty good. I mean, like I just met you a couple of weeks ago and kind of got on board. I'm starting to work through getting onboarded on the tool, because the one thing that I found doing outreach, obviously, because I do PR and marketing, a lot of the tools that you use for that are old school PR tools like Cision and Muckrack. There's a bunch of them. And I pick on Cision particularly because it's awful. I'm not a fan. And I've used Muckrack before, and those guys are good, but it's just, they're different tools. Like there's no tool that pulls this all together in one spot like you guys did. I haven't found one, and I've tried a lot, And they all fall down on the connection between contact and then outreach. Like it, the connecting the dots, the research, like what we used to do like all the time. Jane, my late wife taught me this, right? She would spend hours and hours and hours and hours researching, you know, who to send to. And then she'd spend hours and hours and hours on the pitch, because for her, it's like the pitch is gold. Like I make my money on the pitch. I know what I need to say. And I, like you said, I mean, we develop relationships with reporters and journalists and bloggers because of that pitch and the relationship and the connection. And, you know, pulling that all together in one place is, yeah, until you guys did it, I had never seen anything work like that before. So kudos to you guys.
I really appreciate the kind words and, you know, hopefully we can get just improve from here. I mean, that's our beta version you saw, and you got to see the new version. I'll definitely show you a sneak peek when it's ready. You'll be one of our early.
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah. Like I said, this is a hard, like it's so, I can't stress this enough. And this is the thing that my like clients, so startups that want to do PR outreach and marketing and all this organic stuff, they typically have the spray and pray mentality, right? Oh, we're just going to spend millions of dollars on ads and we're going to get up our traffic and all our vanity metrics, right? Like name a vanity metric and these guys chase it with money. I think I read the other day that like 30% of all venture capital raise goes to digital ads, literally goes to Google or Facebook, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, let's just make them more richer, right? Because it's an arms race, right? Who's going to spend more on keyword or whatever? And I'm not saying that you shouldn't spend, like you may want to spend on ad, don't get me wrong, but fundamentally you need to have the platform, like you need to do the work in order to have the proper SEO organic search results that you can then use to scale, right? And
exactly.
Best way to do that's with outreach. I mean, PR is all about having other people tell you you're awesome, right? As opposed to marketing, which is like, look at me, look at me, look at me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jari. And a lot of marketers, unfortunately, and I totally understand why that happens, though, because, you know, paid ads are very smart to make it very clear in terms of ROI. And it's much easier to implement. It's much quicker. You can see results fast. But the problem is the CAC, the customer acquisition cost, is just ridiculous. And it's just on a hockey stick growing. Like, our Facebook ads, that they're nowhere near where they were even like 3 months ago. It's just getting more competitive by the day because of the bidding system. So at some point, you're gonna hit that plateau. Okay, it just doesn't make any sense. Plus, very hard to scale, because the only way you can keep the moment you turn that app ad budget off or drop it, conversion is going down to zero. So.
Yeah. I mean, people are scared. Yeah. You tell them, you sometimes tell them, I said, well, what kind of keywords are you, you know, buying, you know, pay-per-click? They're like, oh, branded, like the name of our company. I'm like, why would you do that? That's stupid. Well, what do you mean? I go, you mean you're not ranking for the name of your company in Google? Like, boy, you need the fundamentals. Like, right. Do not pass go. Stop and work on that. Right.
Mm-hmm. I know some companies do it because their competitors have started to, bid for their own branded keywords, so they sort of have to in order to just stay competitive, not lose traffic. But yes, we even made the same mistake at Vizme. I remember we had some campaign on AdWords. It was doing like really well, and I was like, okay, this is sort of too good to be true. Let me dive into this. So we just realized for that ad group, we didn't exclude Vizme keyword, like the branded keyword. I was like, ah, the moment we shut it down, the conversions dropped like 1/3.
Yeah. So. Except because, I mean, and it's, this stuff's tricky. It's so, I don't blame people either, right? Like you have to understand experimentation. You have to understand statistics, data. I mean, you really need a data scientist, honestly, to really do this right. And I know the fear. It's like, well, this is the easy way out. We'll just throw money at it. And that's true. It is. But like organic you know, search engine optimized keywords and good storytelling, that takes skill and craft that not a lot of folks are willing to take the time to do. I mean, you know, people will spend years developing the product and then think that they're going to have to go hockey stick in a month. And you're like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, it's probably the equal amount of time and money on the development side and the marketing side. Like, generally, that's probably true. So super fascinating.
I agree. It's super cool. But, you know, the things that I'm done, so speaking of paid ads, there is still some stuff you can do with paid ads that are cool. Like, I like the Facebook retargeting. I think that's very valuable because 80, 90% don't take any sort of action. So that would be good to sort of catch them well you can. And plus on AdWords, like you can set up folks who have, for example, are doing research on your competitors, or they've looked up like branded keywords of your competitors. So you can hit them with some display ads, some really niche stuff you could do. But, you know, that should be like 2-3% of your marketing budget. Like, it's a tiny percentage, but people just look at that as like the only channel.
Well, I think it's marketing. I mean, think about it. It's probably backwards, right? Most people spend 95% on ads and 5% on organic and content, because this is the same with PR, which drives me insane. They're like, well, tell me the ROI on PR. And I'm like, well, I really can't do that. That's hard to do. Well, then how do I know it's being effective? And I'm all, fair question, but actually a pretty asinine question. It's like, so you don't want to talk to potential customers. You don't want to build relationships with people that can, just like, it's like biz dev. You wouldn't do biz dev or sales. Like, sometimes it's easier to show the ROI on a sales guy or gal, right? They make this many calls, they convert this many. Okay, I get that. But the even marketing ROI, that's, I think, the reason why people throw money at that stuff, right? Because it's like, oh, well, I can show my boss the ROI on this ad and my marketing spend. Okay, well, now let's do ROI on organic search or ROI on PR. Oh, that's a little harder for me to do. Oh, I mean, I got to dig in. I got to, you know, where is my earned media and all this sort of stuff? What, are these PR people even, what the hell are they even doing, right? Yeah, it gets a little harder. And I think what's beautiful about Respana, without the D, I think you're getting closer and closer to being able to show an ROI on this sort of outreach. I mean, I think you're on the path to that, honestly. It seems that it's in a pretty good spot. So have you seen that similar kind of feedback from people?
Exactly. Yeah, especially when I talk to some CEOs, they get on calls with me to just try to figure out, okay, what the hell are these guys doing? They didn't know I come from Bizme, and they're like, oh, how are you doing? So we talk, and they're like, yeah, man, you know, it all sounds great, but the problem is I have a hard time figuring out whether that works for us or not. And just because of that uncertainty, they just stay away from it, which, you know, understandable. But I think at some point in the future, it becomes inevitable. It's sort of back in the day when people had to do, like, you know, TV ads and stuff. And when Facebook came around, they're like, it doesn't work that much. You know, how can it be? How many people use the internet? Like, it's very little. And then that sort of becomes an inevitable shift. And I think that's something that I foresee the market work towards, is that earned media is going to be, and also not just that, it's also a matter of organic traffic, like positioning your site for your brand to show up in places where people are looking for it, because day by day, paid advertising is getting more expensive. And unless you have a product that has very high LTV, meaning you sell like a super expensive product that's enterprise related, cold outreach is also going down as far as the reply rates and effectiveness goes. So there's really not much option by just basically building an optimized site structure and actually harvesting some backlinks and building relationships and take that route. And it's just a market transition. It's going to take some time, just like anything else. But I personally think it's going to happen sooner or later.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, do you know Cameron? Do you know who Cameron Harold is?
I don't think so.
So he is the ex-COO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And he wrote a book called Free PR, How to Get Chased by the Press Without Hiring a PR Firm, which of course is heresy in my world. What? You don't want to hire me? I actually, it's interesting. It's so super cool. He's in the Trends Facebook group because I belong to this Trends group through the Hustle. I mean, I talk about those guys all the time. They're great. But Cameron's thesis, which I agree with, honestly, is that, you know, I this part of this is really super important. He's like, look, public relations is an essential part of doing business. It just, you have to do some sort of way to outreach to know, have people know, like, and trust you. You know, you do biz dev, you do sales outreach, you have to do public relations. I mean, that's what marketing is, right? And everyone, of course, there's always the tension between the sales guys and the marketing guys. And they're like, oh, who the heck are you guys? Sales guys, we bring the money in. And marketing's like, well, we make sure you can actually close the sale, right? So there's always this great little tension. And of course, you throw PR in the mix and everyone's like, what is this nebulous thing? But his point, which again is really, I think, spot on, is he's like, you have to build that capacity in your company. You need to have someone at your company that's responsible for that. That is doing the outreach. That is trained and knows your product, your service, whatever, like back of their hand. Like they're in it. They're bought in, right? And but the problem has always been with people internal is that they don't have the relationships that pros have. I mean, the reason why people hire a traditional PR firm is because, oh, you know, every reporter, you've done this before. You've got, you know, decades of experience. You know how to tell the story, right? Like, fine. That's like, you know, part of what I do, but then I kind of do more than that because now people are like, well, how do I tell my story? And so that's where I come in. Like, I can help you tell your story, right? That's the most important thing. But, you know, his point is very valid because when startups will come to me and say, oh, we're launching in 2 weeks, we need PR, I just laugh at them behind their back and say, you don't have, 2 weeks is never enough time for this. And then they ask the ROI question, right? And I've always had a bad answer, to be honest. I can only say, look, I'm a professional. This is the way it works. This is what I've done for other clients. This is how it works. And but I've never had like, how do we ground that in some sort of reality, right? Like, and it doesn't need to be like, you know, statistics like we do for pay-per-click, right? But to have a process and to have a methodology and to have that almost kind of be exposed would be, I think, you know, be transparent. Because the what you built in your tool in Respana is the best in-class, best practices way to do outreach for a firm. This is what they do. They may have be able to call the editor of the New York Times because they're buddies. Okay, great. But that's like 10th to 100th of a percent of what's out there, right? And so to expose the process is, I think, a good thing. And I think that's what Cameron did in his book. It's a great book, by the way, even though I'm like, he wants to put me out of business. Doesn't really want to put me out of business, but it's a great book. Every founder should read it because you should know what you're getting into. Because I've seen founder, that's the reason why, you know, Jane wrote 7 PR Secrets All Founders Should Know. Because know what you're buying. It's like pay-per-click ads. Just don't throw money at it. Like, think about what really works, man. And you're right. Unless you have high customer long-term value, it's a waste of money, I think, personally. And you can see that from, look at B2B sales. I mean, even how you and I got your sales process, right? How you got to talk to me through outreach. And then you're like, well, let's set up a call. Like, that's B2B sales. Like, yeah. Can you do that for every direct to consumer product and client? No. But that mentality and that thought process and the process in which to outreach, I think you're onto something, honestly, you know,
I really do. That for sure.
And, you know, Jory, it's so tough.
Yeah, I believe you. And, you know, the thing is, one thing I agree with some of the people that you've interacted with, because, you know, I run a business myself and I run a software company. We do very little traditional PR, if any. And the reason being, and it's, I actually sent the, and I started glancing over, and I have it on my to read list to read the book, Your Late Wife, at Rin, I think it's called, the first page or two I read very quickly when you sent it to me. It's like, not everything you do is newsworthy. And a lot of people, unfortunately, fall into that trap that they look at PR in terms of, okay, let's get New York Times to write about our company and what we do. You know, let's say they do that. It's worthless. I'm sorry if I say this, but yeah, it's cool if you want to put that on your site, we were covered by New York Times, and, you know, pitch it to some investors, throw it in the slide and say, hey, by the way, we've got feature on New York Times. That's the only thing that's good for. Bears very little value when it comes to actual acquiring, you know, during your customer acquisition. We need to look at PR is presenting, positioning yourself in places where people that are looking to buy would find you. And now, That obviously a big aspect of it is organic, and that when you're getting mentions and backlinks from other websites and they're talking about you, that helps. But you need to have a strategy going in. A lot of the PR that we do at the top of the funnel, say we, for example, let me give you an example. We never reach out to journalists and say, hey, we develop Respondent, come look at us and write about us. Or, hey, we develop VizMe, it's a cool product, come write about us. The ones that actually take the time to do don't normally have much better things to write about and normally don't have the best audiences. But the way we went about PR at the very top of the funnel, just to kind of give you an example of some of the stuff that we've done that's more closely related to traditional PR, is, for example, we're a data viz tool. VizMe, a big part of it is that you can visualize your data. So what we did with a campaign we ran with our previous content manager, that remember the before the last season of Game of Thrones came out, we went ahead and got this betting site that just got the stats out based on how much people were betting on, you know, individual characters to win the Game of Thrones. And I actually haven't watched the last season yet because they all spoiled it for me. But anyways, what we did then is to go ahead and went ahead and put together some infographics using our own site that had our logo on it, like built with VizMe. And then we visualized based on what other people's perceptions were, who was going to win the Game of Thrones. And it was like a good looking graphic because we were a design tool. And then we went ahead and looked up on Google News at a time we didn't have a Respondent. We looked up Game of Thrones and looked up all the journalists that were covering Game of Thrones like yesterday. Reached out to every single journalist. Was like, hey, just came, finished reading an article on Mashable about, you know, the season of Game of Thrones. By the way, we just visualized this graph on who's going to win the Game of Thrones. I thought you would get a kick out of it. Feel free to take a look and let me know what you think. That resulted in 60 major press mentions, like,
yeah,
dedicated articles,
yeah,
including
huge.
Our. Yeah.
Huge.
Now that you might look at and say, hey, you know, this is, yeah, obviously people, like, we got featured on Men's Health. Now, yeah, tens of thousands of people land on that site. It doesn't necessarily help with getting conversions out of it. But matter of fact, that they've only seen our brand, they've seen our logo. That, you know, in any customer journey to purchase your product, then you need to have 7 touch points. Look at it as one of those touch points. They've seen you and heard you somewhere. Now, as I mentioned at the very beginning, we spent very little on building a brand and becoming a household name, because that's a very expensive game to be in. But the matter of fact is that you need to measure an ROI of your PR in terms of what the goal for that campaign was. The campaign's goal wasn't to generate customers, was just to get as many press mentions we could as a touch point in our customer acquisition journey, which we accomplished. Now, most of our marketing initiatives are revolved around ROIs and customer acquisition. And for that, we have a process set up. And then the PR average for that is completely different. So when you say PR, you know, that kind of is a broad word that describes any sort of relationship building with anyone who has some sort of an audience. And so, for example, what I'm doing right now is PR. Now, this is at a very bottom of the funnel, because folks that are listening to this right now are people that are running businesses or entrepreneurs and potentially would be interested in our product. Now, when I'm coming on here and educating and, you know, just talking about our experience, that builds a level of credibility for me as a personal brand. And that you know, transfers that credibility to the company I'm buying, which is Respond. And, you know, every time I get on a, got on a podcast, I get some LinkedIn requests. And that to me is the ROI of the time that I'm spending here. Not to say I don't love chatting with you guys.
What are you trying to say? It's not a good, I know. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I don't think founders, business owners, including me, I'm 100% guilty of this. So I'm taking my own advice. The whole reason why I do this podcast is to meet great people like you, meet great entrepreneurs, be known as someone that I, you know, can have a conversation. And if one day you may need some help, storytelling, PR, market, whatever, oh, you'll remember me because we mutually benefited each other. And I think this is so key. And I'm so glad you brought up the Game of Thrones thing, because if you're a startup company, whatever you are, and you have a unique set of data, or you can give digest data, or you can, you're a source of quote unquote expert / truth. The more that you send that out, the more that you promote that, the more that you share that with people and be useful to them without expecting anything in return, they will remember you. And there's like a company called Databox. I don't know if you've heard of Databox, but they do all of these great, you should talk to them. They're actually really good at outreach too. They use Haro, which we've talked about, right? Haro is bought by Cision. Great idea. Hasn't been updated since, and I'm not joking, probably the mid 90s or 2000s. It's just so, anyway. But what Databox does, which I actually, they pitched me a lot because I got into their little process. They provide summaries, posts of marketing information, like what's the one metric that you need for a Facebook ad kind of thing, right? So they have like five or six of these stories they're always working on. And they reach out to you and they say, hey, we'd love to quote you. What do you think? You fill it in, and they've done this through Haro as well. And then you send it in and they're like, hey, look, you got, you know, put on the thing. And you're like, oh, cool. And of course, then they promote it. And their whole thing is to build up organic SEO. That's their methodology. It's very effective, because let's just say you quote 20 people in an article that are all related to like what we do. You don't think I'm not going to share that? You don't think I'm not going to put it on my website maybe, or, you know, respond to a comment, because we're building a relationship, right? Like, and I think that's the reason I love your, you know, your guys's tagline, which is don't spam, build relationships. And in the PR game, specifically in the PR game, the most important thing is building those relationships and being useful without the what's in it for me. Like,
exactly.
Because that is not the right attitude to have. And I always feel that, you know, to be of service and useful. I mean Cameron says the same thing, like in his book, and he's done this his whole life as the CEO, ex-CEO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And he's doing a coaching thing now for second in commands. He's a big into second in commands. It's providing to a community, being of service, because service is our ultimate goal in anything, right? And yeah, we got to eat and everything, but I like his attitude about it. His actually really spot on, and your attitude on it as well, which is also mine. That's why I think I like it so much. You know, oh, you agree with me. So
it's funny you mentioned this also, Jory, because this is exactly what's happening right now. So the current PR campaign we're running in Respond, and again, I don't want to spoil things, because obviously we want our campaigns to still be effective after this interview comes out. But for example, say so as I mentioned, we're working on our final version. We have a big out of beta launch coming up later this year. Now we want to make a big bang out of it. And we at least want the people that are, you know, influencers in the industry, you being one of them, the PR space, you know, which is the same space we're in. We want to start the conversation now, which is, you know, 6-7 months from now. And the way we're doing this is so we have a popular site now. So we're our blog, we're PR72, you know, it's getting a good amount of traffic. Now we want to put together a a, you know, this is what we call an expert roundup. And then we're, for example, we pick a few parent topics and then we reach out to say like 10 influencers from our list of most wanted 100 people that we want them to talk about us. And then we're going to them. He's like, hey, Jari, you know, we're actually putting together a guide on, say, PR, and we'd love to feature a quote from you about this X, Y, and Z. And we'd love if you would contribute it. We would, you know, we would share this on our social and we would give you a backlink from our website. And you know, requires 30-second your time. And you're like, yeah, why not? Now, once we have broke bread together and we collaborated, you've heard of us, we've offered some sort of incentive and we've built that relationship. Now, a few months later, it's like, hey, by the way, Jari, great chatting with you. Long time no talk. By the way, we have a big launch coming up in a month or so. And, you know, we're trying to get the word out to the right audience. And I was wondering whether there's anything that we could do to help, or if there's something you need help with that, you know, we could collaborate on, maybe get on a co-webinar together, or yada, yada, yada. And then you invite your audience, we invite ours, you know, we share the leads, let's talk. And, you know, that step-by-step aspect of things, that obviously some founders might listen to this and say, that's a lot of work. And it's true. It is a lot of work, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's just as much work and money it is to do your pay-per-click ads. So you're going to spend $1 million on pay-per-click. Why don't you get a bunch of interns like Farzad, like find some smart people and do this? Because it, I mean, I'm yelling at you guys right now because it's the truth. Like Crazy Uncle Jari is going to tell you the absolute hard fact. The best way to build your brand and get customers is to do exactly what Farzad just said. Like it takes 6 months to do a proper launch, minimum. You got to start before you're ready. And yeah, it's going to take your time. And yeah, you know what? You're not going to be able to build your product and do all your techie stuff that you love so much, tech founders. Like, I know you're scared. I was scared too. I'm a techie at heart, right? I know I hate this stuff. I just happen to be really good at it. And I mean, honestly, it's a hard job. I never had a ton of respect for salespeople until I tried to start selling stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I have a tremendous amount of respect for people that actually get out and sell things. It is one of the hardest things to do other than starting a company is try to convince someone to buy your product. And you can do it a bunch of different ways. You can spray and pray with digital ads. You can do all the metrics that matter and all that sort of stuff. And you can do your growth hacking. That's all going to be arbitraged away. Every 6 months, it changes. Every 6 months, it goes away. That new hack, gone. What lasts? Relationships.
Yeah, I mean,
last.
That's not to say not to do things, you know,
right.
Jari.
Totally.
It's
yeah.
It's just another channel.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
I mean,
right.
At Respondent, for example, we do cold outreach, we do some ads, we do, you know, sales, we do content, we do PR. Anything you can name, we do. And as a marketer, 90%, this is based on my limited experience. Obviously, I'm sure there are people who are, you know, a lot more experienced than I am. They've been in the industry for 30 years or so. But based on my experience, 90% of you're going to do stuff that you're going to do as a marketer isn't probably going to yield to anything.
Yeah, yeah.
About and 10% it, of what
yeah,
you do.
I would agree. And then if you're really good, 20% of the stuff you do will matter.
Exactly. And the matter of fact is your job as a marketer is to figure out what that 10 to 20% is, eliminate the rest of the junk, and focus and double down on the 10 to 20% stuff that you do. Because unless you experiment, unless you get out of the way and actually, you know, do things, you wouldn't know what those are, and you're stuck with the channels that you've always been. So that's just my two cents right there. It's just that, you know, normally it's difficult for you. You know, it might be a daunting task for founders, especially when it comes to SEO, because everybody out there right now and their mother considers themselves as an SEO expert. Now I built sites from 0 to 30, 40K and from 30 to 40K to 2 million. I don't consider myself a SEO expert. Not yet. I don't know nearly enough as a lot of
well, others. Well, yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, but I think the fundamental thing that you've done and that works and that has actually been around for 100 plus years. Like if you look at the godfathers of advertising and copy. You know, guys like, I forget his name. His first name's Claude Hopkins. Probably one of the early guys in direct mail. Like, if you look at the direct mail guys, which mostly they were all guys, you look at the Ogilvies of the world, you look at all the people that have like figured out what mattered to convert someone getting a postcard or a piece of paper in the mail, which I know sounds old school and I know it sounds we don't have metrics. Just bear with me, right? Because y'all got to learn from the past. You got to respect the elders that have come before you, because literally, fundamentally, they knew what they were doing. What they figured out, which is the fundamental core of all of this, it's the base. It is what Aristotle figured out 2,000 plus years ago. It'll never change throughout all of time. It's the company that tells the best story wins. Hands down. And how you tell the best story is you talk to people and you get them to repeat your story. That's what a meme is, right? That's your job. That's your whole job. That's it. That's all. And you can spend money on spray and pray ads with a little bit of, you know, smarts. Fine. You could do that. You could work on relationships. You could do that. You could get your story straight, which I recommend you do. And I also recommend you get your story straight and talk to people that may be your customers. And so, and if you can do that more efficiently, great. But I mean, you know, the conversion rates for direct mail, as an example, are better than the conversion rates for pay-per-click ads. You know, ideally you're at, you know, you're converting at 1% and a hot list is at 5% for direct mail. Like, when was the last time you had a 1% conversion rate to customers on your ads? Maybe you do. I don't know. Maybe you figured it out. Great. How many of you, if that's a little bit below that. So, sorry, I get passionate about this because I get asked these questions all the time and I finally have a can be like, well, let's look at Respana and see how we can make it work. So, or at least, you know, go down the path of the ROI stuff, right? Which is a valid point. Don't get me wrong. I would love nothing more than to prove why I'm worth what I'm worth. Not just trust me, right? I get it. I've been in that position too. So anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Farzad, it's been great, man. I'm so happy we could talk.
And, same here. Yeah, we went all over the place.
I know. Well, that's sometimes
Aristotle
how this.
From 2,000 years ago to SEO to marketing, I think we've covered it all.
Well, and where you're from, the cradle of civilization. I mean, that's, yeah, you know, tens of thousands of years of that same stuff, right? Like, it, the stuff, it's baked in our DNA. But, you know, I really appreciate your time, man, being on the pod. Love what you're doing at Respana. Love the story. Just thanks so much. And look forward to seeing what you guys do in the future.
Of course. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you, Jari, as always. And you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed with the launch, hopefully in a few months. And, you know, so see where we can go from there.
Great. Take care. Stay safe.
My pleasure. See ya.
Okay. As promised, here are some actions to try or advice to take that I learned from this interview. Start early when planning a campaign for your launch. A few weeks is just not enough time. Farzad is starting building awareness to launch his product 6 to 7 months ahead of the launch. So he's in a beta program right now. Build authority and credibility by writing blog content, connecting with experts, and showing up on influencer podcasts. This is really important. You got to get the PR cadence done early and often and can just continue to do that. That's the reason why I love this Respana tool so much, right? There's no one-size-fits-all approach to marketing. And part of the marketer's job is to experiment and figure out what works. Of course, there's lots of different ways to do this, lots of different outreach. But just remember, there's no one-size-fits-all. There's not going to be one magic silver bullet for what you need to do. But there are certain things that are the most important thing to do for marketing, right? And one of which is building relationships with people in your niche that can talk about you. And the sooner you do that, the better. So always constantly be looking for people that you can help
and that can help you by writing about you. So there you go. Those are a couple of actions to try, advice to take, this new little segment at the end, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening to the show once again. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.